But then if he did something that was real committal, like I love you and talk about our future, I would break up. Mm. And so John would say that I broke up with him 1,100 times. And so, and he even mentioned that I would say to him, "You're too nice. Call me a bitch or say something mean to me." Mm. And I don't remember saying that. And he said I was dead serious. So that just shows you the frame of mind that I had, yeah, even in our 20s. Mm-hmm. But I really had no clue that I was so just lost, that I just couldn't, you know, handle someone showing me love, because yeah, in my head, I was defective. Mm-hmm.
Welcome back. We are on today with my guest, Shannon Higgins, on the Tool for Dishit podcast. I'm your host, Angie. So first of all, I want to give a big, big thank you to you for listening and sharing the podcast. I found out a couple of weeks back that the show was selected as one of the top UK funny and comedy podcasts on the web by Feedspot, who ranked it at number 10. And that's in, well, this month, October 2021. So it is all thanks to you. And it's also thanks to you that I've been included in the charts around the globe. So I want to give you a big, big, big thank you for sticking it out with me and keep listening. This means a lot to me and it's a big deal. So thank you to you. Thank you to all my guests. Thank you all, because you all helped me get here. So today we have Shannon Higgins, who is back for a fourth time. You may remember her from last year when we talked about, it was a three-part series on gaslighting, narcissistic abuse, and so on. And those were a bit heavy. So today she's actually back with a happy story because she's now married. And so today is all about how leaving that terrible relationship and, you know, you've done the work in therapy, but now what? You know, how do you recognize a healthy partner? How do you not sabotage a good thing again? So this is about how you can put all damaging patterns to bed. We share tips on how to know on a cellular level what an emotionally healthy person is, and learn to trust yourself and your gut instincts. And John's wedding vows that I'm referring to in the episode, you can hear them at the end of this recording. They are the last 3 minutes of this episode. So if you want to hear John's wedding vows, that's where you can find them, at the end of the episode. So without further ado, please help me give a big warm welcome to Shannon. Let's begin. Hi, Shannon.
Hi, Angie.
Welcome back. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, thank you. I love being on your podcast.
Well, this is great because, you know, your episodes are some of those that had the highest downloads. So you're a very popular guest. And, you know, a lot of you are going to remember Shannon from last year. We did three episodes. One in February 2020, one in April 2020, and one in May 2020. And it was all around narcissism, gaslighting, abusive relationships. And, you know, it came from the story of Shannon herself being in one, like in a toxic marriage, and getting out of it. But it wasn't without realizing that when she went to couple therapy, that the industry was quite unprepared, or at least a lot of therapists were. They were not really good at recognizing the signs of narcissistic abuse and how to support the victims of it. So that sort of led her to train other therapists to recognize the signs. And it's kind of a little bit how, you know, Shannon and I, how we connected through, like, you know, she was someone that came in recommended to be a guest on the podcast to talk about those topics. And so I'm very excited to announce that, well, that Shannon is now married, from what I can only tell from what I saw and what I also hear from you when you speak about John, that he's a really, really sweet man. And I really want you to share with us how you found love after going through the abuse that you did and how you found a way to trust again. So this episode is very much more about, it's like the hopeful one. It's like, you know, what happens once you see, you know, after you've reached the light at the end of the tunnel. And so that is something, you know, that when I saw as well your wedding video, because I couldn't go to the US, you know, with the restrictions, I saw your wedding video and I was really, really, really touched by the vows of John. And I know people are going to say, oh, it's only vows and stuff and stuff. But it sort of hit me somewhere that, and I have never experienced, you know, I don't want to come here and say like, oh yes, I've had like, you know, I've been in a narcissistic abuse. I haven't experienced that. I haven't been in a relationship. There's been, you know, turbulence and things, but never on a level where I would ever dare to say, I understand what you've been through. But what I mean is that was when it really touched me, because for me, it's really easy to forget that when a man loves, and that's what I felt when I was listening to him saying his vows to you, and I'm gonna play a snippet as well, I'll put that in the episode, how when a man loves, when they really, really love, it's just so pure. And I'm not saying pure in a sense that we're, you know, we're not having sex and all, but like, I mean, there's a purity about it, and there's this very like, you can sense that protection and wanting to serve and the woman, and it's not serve like it, a lot of people maybe misunderstand that, but like it's just that beautiful thing when a man actually loves a woman and makes her feel safe, and he does that by protecting and making sure that she's happy, and it's a two-way street obviously, but it's that thing that I was like, do you know what, I've been so cynical that actually when I watched your wedding video, I was like, oh, maybe I would like somebody. any other time I'm like, I don't even want anyone near me. You know, I've been in that zone for quite some time now. I'm like, I don't want anyone near me. So, but it's, yeah. I want this as like, it's a great way to see what happens after you've done the work, what happens after you've done the work on yourself and you've making better decision. So I'm really excited to have you back on the podcast to have this side, because I know that the three episodes we did were, you know, they were quite heavy. I needed to process. It was a lot of, they were not easy topics. And so this is a great way to sort of come out of the other side. And So before we dive in, Shannon, please introduce yourself, where you live and what you do.
Okay. And I love that, you know, you gave that disclosure about, you know, just not having hope. And when you were talking about that, I was there where I never got to a place of man hating, because my family is all men and I grew up as an athlete. So I didn't get there. But as far as being in a relationship, oh, I was like ice. So Thank you for saying that, because it's so relatable. Yeah. So my name's Shannon Higgins, and I'm a therapist in private practice in Plano, Texas, and it is a suburb north of Dallas, Texas, and I love being here in Texas, because a lot of us aren't really stiff. We're very friendly, and we do have all the same issues that everybody else has, and people like to say, well, then we have them larger here in Texas, but we don't. I started my training about 24 years ago, and it was really eye-opening, because my training was at Genesis Women's Outreach, which is a outreach program for women who've been through domestic violence and sexual abuse. They had a shelter for people who were there hiding and escaping for protection. And that was hugely like mind blowing to me, because little did I know what that would open up.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so you are, in terms of like what you do, you are a therapist and you train other therapists. Could you, like how would you, I guess, like define yourself?
Yes. So I am a licensed professional counselor. There's a lot of different, you know, certifications and licenses that we can actually do mental health counseling. I am also a supervisor. And so I train interns, but also practicum students. And so those that are interested in pursuing this specialty of working with abuse, I work with relational abuse. And then I also, narcissistic abuse is also considered to be elsewhere. So not just with relationships, but it can happen in all sorts of environments. So I do that training and also doing continuing education for other therapists. So doing some programs, teaching them, you know, all the aspects of narcissistic abuse. So the recovery process, but also what to look for in the session, and to really emphasize that couples counseling is not a good idea. And that's just because it is very hard to detect it. And what happens is the victim ends up getting blamed in that scenario.
So did you say couples therapy is not advised?
Not at all.
I mean, if you are in an abusive relationship, not if you are in a, I guess, like a regular.
Right. Thank you. Yeah.
Right.
So,
okay.
Right. So if we have found that there is, you know, evidence that this is an abusive relationship, then we say, you know, don't do couples counseling because it will be, you know, counterintuitive. Mm-hmm. If we don't know, then sometimes it is actually really productive to try at least one or two sessions to, you know, understand what they've been talking about, to meet that partner and see if we can, you know, sense anything. Sometimes it's better, instead of doing couples, to see that person individually if they do want to come in.
I guess what I'm asking is that when you say couples therapy is not a good idea, it's like within the context of an abusive couple, right? An abusive
right.
relationship. But any relationship that's not abusive, but that just goes through the roller coaster of being in a couple, you know, goes through like bad, rough patches. Then couples therapy is not something that you are advising against. Like couples therapy is fine.
Oh, couples therapy for people who are going through typical relationship issues, even if it's really rocky and crises, I highly recommend couples counseling.
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify that. But yeah, because I guess like is the reason why it's not advisable when it's in a abusive relationship is because I guess the abuser will get more ammunition or and be able to also, I guess, turn it around, like you said, often. The victim is being blamed more because they obviously they are working with a different kind of dynamic here.
Yes. So if there's abuse in this situation, it's almost like multi-layers can occur and each layer is toxic. And so it will actually just create more fuel for the fire and they'll take home what happens in the session. So punishment can happen. It can increase the danger. And then also the abuser can have the tendency, because of the lack of empathy, they can stay calm. And then what will happen is the victim will emote. That mm-hmm. person will have the typical emotions. And in that setting, it won't look typical. It will look like, see, she's completely unstable.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why it is very, you know, difficult to see what's really going on.
Yeah.
The truth.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I guess like obviously like for, you know, if you want to hear more about, you know, the detail of how all of that functions, I definitely would recommend to go back to the episodes from last year in March, April, I think it was, where we went over and covered all these different layers about abuse, or many layers anyway. So, okay, so I'm just stepping out of the episode for a minute. If you like what I'm doing and you want to have your own podcast too, I actually teach this stuff and I absolutely love doing it because podcasting has been such an incredible experience for me. My favorite parts have been being able to just be myself, connecting with fascinating guests from all walks of life, connecting with you as well, you know, engaging with you. It has been really an amazing experience. And so I am beyond excited to be able to help you create your own mark in the world through podcasting by showing you how to do it. So to get the details on how to sign up, just go to learnpodcasting.online. I will add the link in the show notes and I really hope to see you there. So now back onto the episode. So to bring to today, so because I do want you to share us your love story and I sort of like want to know, you know, how, because I know it was not such a straightforward love story, which is kind of why I like it as well, because it's a bit more gritty. It's not like, oh yeah, I saw him, I knew, he knew, 3 months later, bam, we're married, you know, it's not that storyline. So, you know, so I do want you to share it, but I guess like the thing that I sort of, you know, that I wanted for you who's listening to understand is like, you know, that you sort of like had gone through it yourself, even though you are a therapist and you're actually trained within that. And I know, like from what we spoke in the previous episodes, is that was the bit that I remember so clearly that you said that you couldn't believe it happened to you because you trained in this stuff, right?
Yes.
So, you know, that was a whole conversation that we had. So I don't want to sort of necessarily repeat it. But I think it's like the context I want for today. So obviously now, you know that it's something that Shannon has gone through. And actually now, you know, it's a different situation. Could you share with us? Because now we have a context, you know, people understand that you've been through it more than once. And, you know, and now there's like a happy story. And it's not to gloss over the past, but because we've gone over it before a little bit. So I'm really, really eager for you to share with us, like your story with John. You know, how you met, how you got from like, you know, meeting to today, like what were the, you know, and if you don't mind like sharing some of those milestones and how, so if, for, I guess as a first question, like how did you guys meet?
So John and I met in 1990 and both of us were very young and sprightly. I was in college, he was in law school. And we both were working at a camp, Camp Summit. It was a camp for children and adults with disabilities. Now, I was there getting experience for my future career. And John was there because his friend told him that there would be good-looking girls and that he could, and that his friend would, and it was like free boarding and all that good stuff. So John was there for, you know, ulterior motives. I was there, you know, to get serious with planning my future career. And so he, obviously he, well, you all can't see, but he was a very attractive young man. And I, definitely looked at him and thought so, but you know, we were busy with our jobs. We had time off and John and I ended up in the same circle of friends. And once you work at a camp or any kind of place that is very intense, where you're working with people with disabilities, it's a very bonding experience and you live there. So any kind of institutional living, people end up growing into more of, you know, a lovely, intimate group.
It's a lot closer
bond. And so John apparently liked me and I couldn't pick up on it because I had no clue. I grew up with a lot of abuse, so my reality was a little bit skewed. Mm-hmm. And so I just thought, oh, you know, he's a great friend. So as our time went on, he finally, you know, showed me a little bit of more direct, hey, let's go out, let's go on walks. And a wonderful, wonderful love grew from there. And throughout our 20s, we would volunteer at the camp. Every time we would see each other, we would just, you know, grow even closer. And unfortunately, you know, he was so expressive. He was so good to me. And I would literally, you know, reciprocate. But then if he did something that was real committal, like I love you and talk about our future, I would break up. And so John would say that I broke up with him 1,100 times. And he even mentioned that I would say to him, "You're too nice. Call me a bitch or say something mean to me." And I don't remember saying that. And he said I was dead serious. So that just shows you the frame of mind that I had, even in our 20s. But I really had no clue that I was so just lost, that I just couldn't, you know, handle someone showing me love, because in my head, I was defective. So all through our 20s, we would see each other, spend a lot of time together. It was, I really was so in love with him inside, but I just didn't know how to connect with him the way he did with me. So we always found our way back to each other because we had this strong bond with all of our friends. So even on the times I broke up with him, the minute I saw him, that breakup was over. We were just stuck, you know? And we had everything that a relationship, you know, needs. The trust, the safety. We had the emotional intimacy. We had the physical intimacy.
Well, I guess probably more on your end, it may not have felt too safe for him, because every time he was nicer, you'd freak out and break up with him, if that makes sense.
It does. And it's so interesting you said that, because I asked him in preparing for this podcast, how did you keep coming back to me? Because that must have been a horrific experience for you, that you showed me so much love, but then I kept breaking up with you. And his response to me was, "I loved you that much. I was so in love with you. And I knew that you were the right one for me." And he never saw me as a vicious girl. He just saw me as the one he loves. He said he wishes he fought for me more. And he didn't know at that time either that my background was as traumatic as it was. Because again, remember, it was a family secret. So he was very shocked when I married my children's father, because not too long before that, we spent a weekend together. And again, I was more familiar with someone who was emotionally unavailable than somebody who was 100% available and who treated me with the dignity and respect that I deserved. So John was, you know, always there in my heart. And I'm being really honest, like, he was always in my heart, but I went where what was familiar. And it's sad, but that is truly what happens to people who are living with what we call complex PTSD.
Because does it feel like, you know, when you were with John in that time of your life, that it's almost like it was either like quite uncomfortable to be, in the sense of, you know, when you're in the presence of someone who seems like such an angel compared to us, and you're sitting across from that person who's like good and open-hearted and want to commit to you, and it's almost all those things that's off-putting, because you go, where's the trap?
Yes. When is he going to leave me? And what I do recall...
Oh, what's wrong with him? Like, I mean, that I used to have that ever since I was a teen. Like, if a guy... I had it for many years. If a guy liked me and he was good to me, I was like, what's wrong with him? Like, literally, yes. I was like, what's wrong with you? And I didn't know, you know, that's actually, you know, that was unhealthy.
I know, right?
Right? So until you know, you don't know.
Exactly. Mm-hmm, and I always had in my mind, if he really knew me, he would hate me. He would think I'm crazy or he'll leave me.
100%.
And so that was constantly going on in my mind because he was such, and he is, I'm talking in past tense, but this is really who he is. He was such a great guy and not the too good to be true either. Mm-hmm. Because he definitely, we joke about when we both walked into that camp, we were both so full of ourselves, self-centered. Life is a party. And so, we both had that attitude. And obviously, we're together now because we had a lot of growing up to do. And so,
here's this, like, there was a lot of like back and forth, breaking up, coming back. So when did you know it was real, Shannon? Like, what happened? Like, did it have to be really get dramatic before you realized it was real, or how?
I knew it was real for me when I moved to Iowa with my husband, and that was my last ditch effort to save our marriage, and how cruel he was to me. And I found out that he had like serial supply, meaning lots of women. And
oh, nice. he sounds like a real keeper, Shannon.
Yes, Cheerios, but lots of women. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so he just treated me, like I said, like gum on the bottom of his shoe. And it was then that I really went, oh my gosh, like John was it.
Yeah.
And that is true love. And I turned it away every second that he committed to me. Because it was so shocking. So that's when I knew. And, John had always known. And so what he said
you said you knew, like, because of the juxtaposition between your husband and John, or what do you mean?
I mean that, I should have stayed in the relationship with John and never left. Mm-hmm. And never been with my children's father.
Yeah.
But I also have to say, because that sounds awful, I convinced myself of the love story I had with my children's father. And I'm so glad. I would never rewrite my story. But looking with all that I know now with trauma training and et cetera, I see like my self-sabotaging behavior, the flags that I ignored. But again, most of us who've done all this work would never go back and do it over because of all of the work we did. Would never have happened. And then I wouldn't have my two amazing boys.
Well, yeah, of course, there was obviously something, good that came out of it, your children and, mm-hmm. and so many other things, I'm sure, it's not to be flippant, but of course, this experience helps you help other people and to even appreciate John in a different way. I mean, I think sometimes we have to go through, sometimes we go through shit.
Yeah.
Because it's a weird thing. It's like the way I see it, sometimes we don't realize things until later. We can't see it.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm.
So I guess it's like you didn't. So it makes sense also, not when there's a good guy, we don't see it. Our taste in men is different.
Oh, exactly. Mm-hmm. And what always pops in my mind now is that I've had, male friends that are just that good guy.
Yeah.
And how they've told me throughout the years, good guys finish last.
Oh, 100%. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know that. Why?
I know.
Yeah.
And it's so sad. Mm-hmm. And it's true, because so many women, and I'm including myself, go for the bad guy or, you know, looks and the shallow aspect of dating.
Yeah.
And now I look at the suffering that caused me, mm-hmm. And so many women. And so it just isn't, you know, what we need to do.
Yeah.
And that's why there are so many unhealthy relationships. The divorce rate is where it is. And the best thing people can do is to really look at themselves and to trust their own instincts and to be self-aware.
You can trust your instincts after you've done the work, I feel.
Mm-hmm.
That would be my caveat, because I thought I was following my guts too before, you know, mm-hmm. whereas now I can look back and I'm like, my taste in men, like what turns me on is so different. And it has nothing to do with the look, because all of the you know, partners I've had in the past, you'd line them up and you'd be like, oh yeah, they're all different.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, that was the same guy throughout.
Yes.
You know, and it was the same guy, always the same situation. And, you know, at some point you've got to have a chat with yourself, right? And you have to go, listen, I do not run a training academy for broken men. I'm not out here repairing people. I need to repair myself. You know, like at some point enough is enough, like pro bono work, you name it. I'm not doing that anymore. Like now the game is on, you know, like game is on. And I've noticed my attraction has flipped completely. I used to think I wasn't into looks, but I kind of was a little bit. And I feel like now that I almost see it almost a bit as a warning sign. Like I'm not into the guy who is in, how do you call it? Dressed to the nines all the time and always almost like a peacock, and he drives an expensive car. I'm like, this guy is out for himself. Like, I'm not saying that having money is an issue, not at all, but like there is having it and then putting on a display in a way that's trying to attract a certain type. And you can tell when they're just peacocking and they're all about, it's all about them, and they always have the perfect, everything's so perfect. And that to me is like, it's not a giving man, if that makes sense.
You yes, know? Exactly.
It's just like, yeah. So how did you know, like, what were the things you would say that for you, you were like, yeah, John is a good man. Like, how did you know that? How did you, and once you realized that, how did you not let those fears, the gremlins, ruin the relationship this time around?
So I never doubted that he was a good man.
Okay.
So that was always there, because again, like all of the camp friends, that bond has always been there. So we have all been in each other's lives. We've raised our kids together. And so that has always been consistent, and everybody loves John. He has always stayed true. Like his, you know, values are close to his heart. Mm-hmm. He's volunteered with Special Olympics. Like nothing has changed for him. And so that's one huge thing about knowing that you can trust somebody, is that their character just stays consistent. Their values are consistent.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So that I knew. But I was like you when you were talking about, like, I don't ever want to date again. And so when John and I decided to meet for lunch, it was really funny, because one of the first things out of our mouths was, I do not want to date again. And I told him, I go, I really don't need another friend, but you are already my friend. So And so, but the minute I saw him, and this sounds so corny, but it is so true. We met at a restaurant and he was already inside and I was walking inside. And the minute I saw him, it literally was like one of those butter commercials with what's his name? That Italian, you know, dude with the long hair.
No, and, I don't.
Shoot.
Maybe it's only in the US. I don't know.
He's like one of those cheesy Italian models.
But what is it? I'm not gonna know it because I don't even watch TV, so I won't know it. But like, if it's not on Netflix or YouTube, I'm out of the loop. So what? But what is it? So it's like it made you melt like butter. Is that?
Oh yeah. I mean, and it was like everything paused around us, and I saw him and. The whole like butterflies happened again. And so then we, you know, sit down at the table and it's just over. You know, I know that I am right back where we've always been. And the attraction, everything, like I can't just be his friend.
Yeah.
And literally he felt the same way. Now, did we tell each other? No. Because, you know, we had already said, I don't want to date again. I don't need another friend. But, I mean, did we both feel that? Did we leave the dinner and go to a concert and he hugged me? Yes. So after that, it was just, okay, here we are. And we didn't really discuss or, you know, change our status on Facebook. So we just... You know, went with the flow, and he went with, you know, he stayed with me through losing my mom, like going through her illness with pancreatic cancer, went on walks with my mom. My mom was ecstatic that he was back in my life.
Mm.
And she, in front of a bunch of our family friends, said, you finally got your wits about yourself. So you know, he had met my grandparents. So my entire family is so grateful that he's back in our lives.
Yeah. And I guess for you, because obviously you've known him through an extended timeline, you sort of could see, you know, that he'd sort of stayed, he's a guy who's consistent. He's a man, you know, I'm assuming like of his words and more of action than talk. And I guess like, what would you say to someone who, you know, who may not have that experience, or who may not, you know, let's say they meet someone and it's not someone they've known, you know, since 1990, right? So, but how would you say, like, especially after, you know, going through those kind of hardships with, you know, having to still learn the lessons and picking the wrong situation or the wrong man for ourselves. They're probably right for someone else. That's the thing. That's the thing as well that I want to say, actually, is that sometimes there is that combination of us that isn't right. However, me with someone else would be a different dynamic, and them with someone else could possibly be another dynamic if they, you know, unless they're completely pathologically, you know, and again, something that we've spoken about last time, but unless they're completely on the other side of the spectrum or quite bad on the spectrum. But mm-hmm. most people, there are redeemable, you know, sides to most of us. And so I guess it's like, if you've gone through something and you're back out and you say, okay, let's start dating. Like, how do you know? Because at the beginning, everything's usually, you know, quite hunky-dory. And like, how do you know if something is real
mm-hmm.
or a mirage, you know, like a love bomb or something? Like, what would you say? Like, because we have to learn to trust ourselves and our instincts, but like, how do we know if something is real?
This is why I love being on your podcast, because you cover every nook and cranny of these issues that are so important. And, you know, I did have the advantage of knowing John.
Yeah.
But I do have to say, my side of things is the same of what, you know, other women go through. And, you know, the challenges of trusting myself. And I hear that in women all the time, like, how do I trust myself again?
Right. How do I trust that I'm going to make that bad decision one more time?
Yeah, yeah.
Some of us are tired of the lessons, you know.
Yes.
Tired of learning.
Tired of learning.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Tired of going through the hurt again.
Yeah.
And, you know, the pain of breakups and, you know, the thought of going back out there again.
Yeah.
Is just, you know, the worst idea ever. And so that is why, you know, we want to put the gauntlet down, the wall up. And, you know, one thing that is so important is to know that when we do that, we feel like we're protecting ourselves. But the truth is, we're isolating ourselves and we're not growing. And then we're not allowing ourselves, you know, to have joy, to have love. And so, love always does require risk. And, you know, one thing, just like what you said, Angie, is that now your taste in men is different. It has changed. It has grown. And same with your intuition. And one thing that I always ask my clients is, did you have a point in that abusive relationship that you can remember that you even had like this visceral moment that something was off in the relationship? And they may not have known or had an answer for me right in that moment, but they eventually did. And I did too. And so I said, that is your intuition that you need to listen to, because women, for so many reasons, we don't listen to our intuition.
Yeah, but also because when we then share with whoever, they may not always be understanding, because also we're not really telling the whole thing. Because I'm going to be real with you. Like, in the past, like, in terms of my taste of men, it's more because they were emotionally unavailable, that stuff. You know, it's just like, kind of like more like the pathetic side of stuff. You know what I mean? But no,
yes.
You know, still like, you know, disappointing and stuff. But then I did have an experience where actually I did not feel safe. And and you know, I didn't know straight away, but I think I stayed through it for longer than I should have. And I can even look back at pictures. I actually looked drained and I felt drained. I was really drained. And one thing, there's a person, I think I don't, it's not fair on that person for me to resent her, but she is a friend who is a professional. And I did feel like I could tell when I was trying to explain certain things, but I, you know, because you want to protect the person you're with, because what if you're in there for the long run, right? So you're not going to... Right? So, and I felt like she... And I'd noticed that she'd kind of sort of done it before. I feel like she's maybe puts women down a little bit, but I was like, I felt like she was... I almost felt like I was a bad guy, and I knew my behavior was bad. Like, I was always feeling guilty, you know, I don't like arguing, right? Things like that. But there are things that my body would just react. My body would tell me, and especially my lady down there, my other Joe, she's, you know, she was letting me know if things went right. And so that's usually always a sign as well. And what was I saying this for? Is that, it's not helpful when we don't feel, because it's embarrassing, it's humiliating. Mm-hmm. Saying what a person has said, their reaction, how they yelled, all this stuff. It's actually quite, it's humiliating, especially when you're a strong woman or you think you're a strong woman. And for many other things, I would not put up with half of that shit. But somehow you get sort of, you know, and so it's a humiliation. And I think that's a part of it that keeps maybe the person isn't a bad person, by the way. I do want to say that I think it's our dynamic and that the moment in our life, there was a lot of things that sort of got into it. And again, never got physically violent. But I just don't, it has put me off so deeply like, I don't want anyone near me. It's like really, but it's, I think what keeps, I can understand what women stay in a situation like that a lot worse, because mine was very vanilla compared to what anyone else goes through, is that it's humiliating to say. And then you actually finally test a little bit to see, I'm just going to say something, try and share with someone who I know I can trust. And when you see their reaction is like, and maybe their reaction is that way because they don't have the whole story. Right.
Yes, yeah.
And it's, so it becomes difficult because then you feel like an idiot that you even said something. Cause I can like, yeah, now I look really even more shit. Now I feel like shit. And I was definitely guilty of a lot of the bad behavior. So I'm definitely no angel. But it's like, I can understand why it's difficult to get out.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, so there, we have tons of red flags now to, and I mean, we're talking about like 50 that we can give people now and to watch for. And just like you said, the love bombing, because sometimes that honeymoon period is, you know, love bombing and they are great people. But what's different, the reason why we use bombing is because it's, you know, an absolute over and over again. And you will get a sense of, whoa, this is too much. And not the traumatic, I don't deserve this. It's even like, okay, this is a little overboard. And the too good to be true is a perfect, you know, quote, because there are men and women who are too good to be true that will be abusive. There is a man and a woman that they are for all seasons and they're all things to people. Those are people to watch out for.
So, the ones that everybody loves.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some people you want to put a pin in it if everybody loves them, because there are people who are very lovable, likable, but you just put a pin in it because time is really on our side. We have to spend time. But, you know, a lot of reasons why we women especially ignore our red flags is because we have these unwritten societal rules. We have cultural gender roles that are assigned to women, and we have the, you know, generational family traditions that did the early conditioning that the man's the head of the household. Then we have, you know, the family of origin issues like mine, that there's the, you know, abuse in the background. Mm-hmm. And then many of us, there's that spiritual component that we had this love the unlovable, turn the other cheek, you know.
Or that marriage is for life. I mean, like, you know, like in the Mormon church, some of the Mormon churches is like, you know, it's not just for this life, it's for eternity. Like, you know, it's like, it's a real pact that you can't just, it's not an easy one to get out of because of the community. Maybe not even the religion, but just the community itself won't really allow you, I could imagine.
Oh, I mean, and that actually is one of the main reasons why I stayed so long, and the belief that everyone can change. And that I know has been a big heartache for a lot of people, and one of the biggest for myself, because I went into the counseling field believing that everybody has the possibility for change. And, you know, psychopathology has proven this otherwise.
But we have to want to, right? I mean,
you have to, we have to want to for sure.
I mean, I went into a bit of therapy when I was in that situation that I mentioned earlier, because I didn't recognize him as, I knew I had my part in it. And I think the abusive side that I was perpetrating, the way that I would come, that I think I was abusive to him, was that I would always look for a fight, you know, like every other week there was like a new fight. I would always look for something, but it was unconscious. I didn't know I couldn't help it, but there was a lot of other things going on. But at the end of the day, it's not excusable, because it's actually quite abusive to always look for something. You know what I'm saying? It's like, it's not nice. And So I had that part of it, but I wanted that to change. So I went to therapy. He'd never asked me. He never even said I did anything wrong in that sense. But like, I wanted to change that. But had he forced me to go, that would have been, then yeah, you can't change someone for sure. Then I would have probably gone, what? Well, but I think you have to want to change your quirks, right? Because we're not perfect. I'm not perfect by far.
But that is actually one of the main maxims that we have about, you know, how to get confident again, putting yourself out there, is finding what our self, you know, sabotaging behaviors are. Like really being able to be honest with ourselves. And, you know, because while we have been hurt, to get ourselves back out in the world again, we really need to look at ourselves too, so that we have confidence. Because if we're constantly going out in the world and we're wanting to protect ourselves and think about all the behaviors of other people, then we're not confident within ourselves. So like if you going to counseling and addressing that self-sabotaging behavior has you more confident in yourself.
Yeah.
So if we have that fortitude, then we go out in the world thinking, okay, bring it on.
Yeah.
You know, because I feel prepared to protect myself, but also to receive love, to receive joy.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I think where sometimes where the problem comes, and I can see that in relationship dynamics, is like, that's what in that situation was, that if the person thinks they're saints and they always call themselves, they're the, you know, they're always kind.
Yeah.
I'm really listening to that now, because it's like, you can't work with that, because they're always winning. They're always the saint. They're always right. And you're the piece of shit, basically. And it's like, it's a very, it's a difficult one, because they'll always come in with their, you know, high pedestal. And it's really hard to, I think that's the bit that, you know, that's where it becomes a bit of an obstacle, because, you know, they think they're perfect and whatever that means. But
that's a huge flag, because, you know, if anything, when we go for psychological wellness, one of the things we learn is that we are perfectly imperfect, and that we learn, you know, the humanity of our, you know, like circle of people. We learn, you know, that recovery is mostly about acceptance. And so not just acceptance of ourselves, but of other people. And that we build these boundaries for ourselves. And so, but the boundary has, you know, it's like a guidebook to say how you can and cannot treat me and how I will treat you. So we have the listening boundaries, and then we have the acting boundaries.
How, would you say, like, just maybe this is a bit of a curveball question, but, because obviously, you know, when you are in a couple, right? So I want to try and make that, I want to make a differentiation between abuse and regular ups and downs kind of thing.
Sure.
So, because, you know, when you're in a couple, you're going to have, you're not going to agree on everything. You're going to get on each other's nerves at some point, you know, it's a human interaction. So there are going to be things that are going to show up. So in a healthy, quote unquote, relationship, like, what is the, maybe it's a very personal, maybe it's different from person to person, but is it like, how much is it okay to, when you're in it and you really, like, you know, having like an argument, how much is like yelling acceptable, or like how dirty can you fight? Like, what's the, is there like a measurement, like how to know whether one is maybe too sensitive or one is maybe too aggressive? Like, how do people measure that?
I'm glad you brought that up. One of the things about relationships is that to learn to argue well.
Yeah.
And, you know, we can't be perfect, right? So there might be yelling, there might be times where we just completely come unglued. But the most important thing is that we come back and we show humility and accountability. Mm-hmm. And that happens like rarely. What happens more is that we're able to argue well, which means that we can have a dialogue and work something out.
Yeah.
And even to agree to disagree. And the unhealthy relationship is usually that, you know, one or both people cannot bring up a grievance without a power struggle.
That's it. Because I was just wrote it down. Because I was like, yeah. I just wrote down like when. Because that's the thing that I'd noticed is that, I mean, because I don't like, I can confront, but I don't like confrontation. Like, it makes me sick to my stomach. It's really not a place I enjoy, but I will show up for it. You know what I mean? Yeah. Especially if I'm pushed, if I'm cornered, I will fight back. Like, literally, I will. But it's like the when, there's a time and a place, I feel like. It's like when you were saying, like, if every time you bring a grievance, and they are straight away going quite quickly, it doesn't take much from them to suddenly go, not even just yelling. They may not even show up, but straight away go, oh, well, okay, well, I can't do anything right then. You know, they're all deflecting straight away. And then they start to aggravate themselves. And then they all of a sudden, they're like, they're up to 100. And I'm like, I was only trying to have a conversation here. I didn't even know this was like, you know. And I guess it's like when that happens every single time, that's mm-hmm. also one way that you lose safety in a relationship.
You are accurate.
Because then you can't bring up anything, right?
I know.
And, yes. And it's a way for them to not having to face your grievance with them.
I know.
You know? And I think we're all guilty of it at some point, especially, you know, maybe in a family situation, especially growing up when we're kids and stuff, you know. Kids will go whole big drama over things that don't really matter.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because that's one way for them to make sure that things get smoothed over fast, because they need their parents to survive. So, you know, it's like a very primitive reaction. But in an adult relationship, it's very difficult to then go from that to, yeah, let's be intimate and let me show you my most vulnerable part of me and be safe with you. It's like when it happens over and over again, it starts to be very off-putting. And I guess that's where the difference. We can all get down and dirty yelling and lose our shit because we're humans. We're so flawed. But I guess it's like if it's a pattern, and two is also if it's every time that you bring up something that you want to discuss, then that's their response somewhere on that scale, then I guess that's where you know it's not healthy anymore.
Yeah. And you know what I really notice is when a relationship just seems so hard and you're exhausted, you're tired. And that's when I'm like, okay, there's your sign. Mm-hmm. And then I will hear like my client is getting on like anti-anxiety medication or some kind of medication to handle the relationship.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, we do so many things subconsciously, and I'll say, hold on a minute. Do you realize that you are telling me you need to get medication to handle your relationship?
Mm.
And then they'll go, oh my gosh, you're right. You know, because they're like in that relationship, there's really no objectivity happening. And so, you know, of course, the next line of action is to go get medication, not something's wrong with our relationship and getting into solution. And so they may have been trying to get into solution over and over again, but to no avail. So they're thinking, now I need medication. That's a problem.
Yeah. I mean, it is a problem. I think, I mean, the thing is, it's like, I guess sometimes it feels like, you know, that we live in the world of extremes where we don't really know how to sit in the middle or to understand that the extremes aren't necessarily good. So, because sometimes we think, oh, it has to be all smooth sailing. We don't argue. It's all jolly, jolly, you know, and hunky-dory. And then, oh, it's like, oh, my God, it's so difficult, you know, it's so difficult. And it's, but actually, there's also a reality that relationships, in my experience, it may not be everyone, but I do find them difficult. I do find them really challenging because there's a lot of growth that happens. It's exhausting to grow. I'm telling you right now. It's tiring. And so I think there are always going to be components. And I may be wrong, but I feel like there's always going to be components that I know, like I'm always prepared that I am going to 100% feel anxious at some point. And most likely at the beginning. That's the difficult part for me. So like, I think it's being able to discern between, am I just working on my own triggers, my own little demons, or, you know, all this kind of stuff, or is that person feeding on it and pushing me and not being a friend here, you know, and actually, are we growing together? Because also I have to also make allowance that they're going to be growing, they're going to make mistakes, and they're going to say things out of turn. Like I will, you know, we're all going to, mishaps are going to happen. But I think it's like, there's even just the intention, but there's even more than the intention. It's like, if someone is so broken, or if I am so broken, we have to learn to walk away. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I don't know. I think, and again, I don't know, that may not be everyone's solution, but I'm trying to think, like, you know, going forward, because I think, it's hard to know sometimes whether it's never so always clean cut. I think that definitely, as much as I feel a certain kind of way about certain things in that particular relationship, I also do know that I definitely drained him. I 100% was the guilty one too, you know? Like, I definitely drained him. I was definitely a nightmare at some points. And I think that sometimes that's a bit of a hard pill to swallow. That is a hard pill to swallow. But it's like, it's knowing, you know, when is it okay and when is it too much? When is it enough? That's the bit that's difficult, I think, sometimes.
It is, but you know what makes that less difficult is when, you know, you have that level of awareness that you can be honest with yourself and you can be honest with your partner. And that's the thing about, people have to earn your trust. So that's how, you know, dating now, you can be friends. And that usually is the better way to go in. And, you know, I know that our culture is a lot more open, you know, sexually and freely, but it can really complicate if you do want like a monogamous committed relationship to start early with that. And so it's, you know, research shows that if you can go in more on a friendship level and try as hard as you can, because it's hard, but to, you know, have more of that, you know, emotional intimacy, and let them earn trust over time, then that's usually what will create a safe, loving, trustworthy relationship.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think waiting is definitely, for me, because just, I think, just because of how I feel about sex and, you know, so, but and we did actually, interestingly, with that relationship, we actually waited quite a bit, I think about 3 months or something. Not because I was counting, but it's just how it was. But I think that, and again, like, he's not a bad person. We both made mistakes, and we were both dealing with whatever was going on in our lives at the time. So, but I think if you go straight, it's a bit like Russian roulette, right? If you go in straight away and you go straight away and you have sex with someone, unless you're really good at compartmentalizing it and not let your hormones take over, because there is a biological thing that does take place. Whether that's real or not, whether we've just been conditioned for it, it definitely affects me. So because of that, I know to take my time if it's something that, you know, I want to explore with someone. So it's knowing that if you, it is Russian roulette in the sense that you could sleep with someone on the first date and they could be the most amazing human being and you'll be fine and they're mm-hmm. safe. But if they're not, that judgment will be clouded by all the hormones flush, right? So that's yeah. the thing that you have to be, I guess, aware of. If, you know, I think I have one girlfriend who says that she does not get affected by sleeping and she can sleep with, you know, tons of different men, like 4 different guys a week and stuff. Although I don't believe she doesn't get affected because she does complain a lot about some of them. So I know that she's affected. You know, I can't believe he hasn't, you know, bought me a birthday present. I'm like, well, aren't you just fuck buddies? Yeah, but still, no, that's not nothing to do with it. I'm like, okay, well then, you know, I don't know what to tell you. You're right. You're not affected. You don't care. Yeah. You're detached. But so there you go. But that, you know, everyone, each to their own. But it's like,
yeah.
Yeah, I think, yeah, that's Russian roulette. If you're more of a sensitive soul, is to be aware that it will probably affect your judgment. It would affect mine. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and especially with women who are coming out of something really awful. Mm. So no matter, you know, small, medium or large, they're hurt, right?
Right.
And if they're emotionally vulnerable, because dangerous people, toxic people, whatever level, right, they can come on fast and strong and sweep you off your feet. They can be overly invested in you. And so that would definitely be, you know, a terrible place to start.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, you know, would just definitely be a, you know, huge way to get hooked in again to something really, really dangerous.
Well, yeah.
And
yeah,
so,
yeah, because imagine you have like amazing sex, or you just have sex. It doesn't even have to be that amazing to get attached, right? It's like you have sex and then he tries to, like, completely love bombs you. You know, he's all,
yes.
You know, the first 3 months is amazing. And then, you know, that really adds to that cocktail, that magic cocktail of getting hooked.
Yes.
And all of a sudden, bam, they can start to criticize you more and more and belittle you and X, Y, and Z. And that happy train starts, you know, is off, has gone off,
and
left the station.
What? Yeah, most men and women that are toxic and, you know, going up that spectrum to personality disorders are hypersexual. So,
interesting.
And you'll hear men and women in these relationships, they will say it is the best sex they have ever, ever had.
There's tons of memes about toxic sex, isn't it? We want toxic sex, but we want a nice guy.
Explosive. It's like out of this world. And they don't want to let that go. So imagine if they're coming out of a relationship and then they go that direction again. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it is. It's just murky waters. And so we have all of these, you know, flags in place and recommendations for, you know, how we should, you know, get started and that's great. Like, these are wonderful, you know, touch points for us to be aware of, and we're human and we will either follow them or we won't. And the consequences is what the world gives us. And,
right.
You know, we choose the behavior.
Yeah, no, that's true. And I think definitely, like, to look at actions over words, or at least that the words have to match the actions. That's definitely something that, you know, I learned, you know, some years back now, but definitely, like, a man of his word, or a man of a very few words but tons of actions, good actions, that's golden.
Yes, it is.
And even someone who's a bit awkward and who doesn't know how to dress, and maybe he, you know, all of that, perfect, great, I'm here. Oh, over here. You're a bit disheveled, bless you, that's fine, we can sort that out later, you know what I mean? Like, you know, it's just like, you know, I think, yeah, you just start to learn a bit more of the signs of, like, you know, that, not to say that someone disheveled is necessarily a good person, but it's just,
no,
you know, you learn it, you know, it's so is there anything else you'd feel like would be important to the listeners to learn on, you know, if you want to open up to someone now or maybe down the line? But is there anything that anything else you feel you'd want to tell the listeners to, something else like to take away, like how to do that?
Yes, I do actually, because, you know, I have a group that I work with, or, you know, groups with women, and I actually see men too that have been in these relationships.
Yes, because it's not just women for sure.
No, it is so even. And the ammo or the MO is the same. And so, what I really want to convey is that everybody deserves to have love. Everybody deserves unconditional love. And just to remember that the fear to date again is an emotion. It's not a fact. And the fear can be used in a constructive way to be more conscious. And we can do conscientious and mindful dating. And that will allow us to be safe. But there always is that, you know, level of risk. But it's better than the paradoxical protection that we think we're doing by not putting ourselves out there. And, you know, definitely take your time, you know, refrain from impulsive dating because of feeling lonely. But to really just be mindful of, you know, that don't do it for the hunt, you know, let things happen organically. Because again, all those things do, you know, ensure that you'll have a great, you know, relationship. And it's out there. I really believe that people can have a beautiful, loving, unconditional, and consistently loving relationship.
Yeah, and I think definitely, like, you know, like you were saying earlier, you know, like to definitely, you know, get help, like work on ourselves. Because I know that through, you know, working on myself like years ago and getting help around there, it's like I got to make better choices, or not even just better choices. I was attracted to better quality men, you know. I started to feel that I started to feel like good qualities were suddenly a very good turn on, you know, whereas before I'd be like, ah, boring, you know.
Well, exactly.
Where's the passion in that, you know? And it's like you get this, and it only came from, it didn't come from reading an article. It didn't come from reading a book. It came from someone telling it to me straight in therapy and joining a matchmaking agency that was vetting people thoroughly, and that every single man I went on a date with on that agency were there because they were looking for something. So they wanted someone, they were there, they were emotionally ready. Okay. And I never actually met someone through there, like in terms of like to go on a third date with, but I met some incredible men and kind men, generous men. Like they were just really lovely, lovely men. And I started to get a sense of what it felt like to be around a man like that. So that was the first step. It didn't stop me from, you know, having the experience I've had after that. But it wasn't, it's not like it was a traumatic experience. It was just like, it was just a bit, you know, unlucky. And I think it was a bad timing. But he was definitely like still an upgrade from what I've had before. But in terms of, it was just a bit of a bad, like a perfect storm that happened with him and I. But like, I think he's very much... So this is what I want to say. It's like, it's an inside job. For me, it was an inside job, and then getting help. And I know not everybody can afford a matchmaking agency. But it's like if you have friends that you know are solid, but they're just friends, you can ask them, you know, if you know anyone, you know, that you can introduce me. I'm looking at the moment, I'm dating, whatever it is that it takes. Or then, you know, like good people know good people. You know, and if your friends have like husbands or boyfriends that you think are good, solid men, they'll have good, solid friends as well, most likely. And I think that's a good way to start. So for me, it was that I was in the work and then getting used to how it felt like to be around a man like that. And it took me a year and a half, actually, until I finally, in one of those introductions found someone attractive.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome.
You know?
Yeah.
So it changes. Yeah. So that's why I would sort of add to it is, yeah, in the work and then get help.
Oh my gosh. To hook
you up on dates, because I had no idea where to look. I didn't know how to recognize them. So that definitely helps.
Can I? Oh, sorry. No, go ahead. Can I add, though, that please, yes, when you said the work, I have done so much counseling, and I thought, I couldn't believe that I repeated my pattern because of the counseling. But what made the difference, what broke the pattern, honestly, was no one in my previous talk counseling said trauma, said abuse. When I finally had it defined as abuse and trauma, then the work was really getting done, because I did EMDR, which is a neurobiological trauma treatment, and sensory motor psychotherapy. And that's also neurobiological body work. And so those kind of trauma specialties really integrate your trauma experience. And so it's like long, effective treatment. And I think that totally made a difference for my path as well.
Mm. Yeah, it's just like, you know, it really is an inside job, you know, it truly is an inside job. And then the rest, you know, it really makes such a big difference, because you can know something cognitively, but until you feel on a molecular level, understand how it's different in those feelings. And actually, another thing I just remembered is that what the therapist was saying to me at the time when I was joining the matchmaking agency, she said, go on all these dates, go on as many as you can, different, you know, with different types of men, go on these dates and come home and write down in a journal just the main points and see how, and start to see like how you feel. And one of the things that came up was that one of the first guy I was attracted to, this was a kind of early on. So it was because I know I said it took me a year and a half, but this one wasn't quite right, in the sense that when I was like, oh, like I had that feeling that I thought was attraction. Uh-huh. And I came home and I wrote down everything I remembered from the day. Just a mind dump and a brain dump on the paper. And then I saw the pattern that the therapist had, you know, pointed out to me. And I felt anxious. He made me feel less than, and he was making comments. And I wrote those down. Mm. I didn't see it when it was really happening, but I wrote them all down and I went, oh, fuck, there it is. And I was
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And I was like, I'm not going on a second date with him. I cannot.
That's brilliant.
I cannot.
The effect of journaling.
Right. And it took me a while, though, because I hate journaling. So I was just like, just writing it quickly down. But it was like, it took me a while. Like, and if I hadn't written this down in black and white, I wouldn't have picked it up. I would have carried it on. Had he asked me out, for example, right? I don't know if he would have. But like, so I did have some attraction with some of them, but they were the ones that weren't the right dynamic. Even though they came from the matchmaking agency, you still have to vet them for yourself, right?
Sure.
And it wasn't until like a year and a half in that all of a sudden, actually, a peaceful feeling, an attraction towards someone, arousing attraction towards someone, could come from a peaceful feeling. And I was confusing anxiety with passion. That was my pattern, right? So if someone made me feel anxious, I thought, oh, it's passion. I didn't even know it was anxiety. I didn't even know it was anxious.
That is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it had to be pointed out to me. I knew something was wrong with me. I kept making the wrong decisions. I was like, the common denominator is me, not them. So what am I doing? And then someone called me out on it. And I was just like, and it just, something just clicked. Something really clicked. And it just, and that's what made me go with the matchmaking agency. Because I was like, I can't do this by myself anymore.
I love that you did that. Mm-hmm. But you know what's even better is that you actually did the assignment.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh, yeah.
So you got the invaluable, priceless result.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of people won't do like the assignment that professionals will recommend. And so then they don't get this outcome that you got. And that's the brilliance.
Yeah, I wasn't about to, again, be disappointed. I was like, you know, something had to change. I was fed up.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, you're right. You have to do the assignments. You do have to. But I was serious about it. I was just like, this is also why I believe very much that it's not also one person's fault only. It takes two to tango.
Yeah.
Right.
Except for in abusive relationships.
Yeah. Yeah. There are certain, of course. But I do also, in the sense that there's a piece of us that knows. So
yeah.
My body knew. It knew that these people, these were not abusive relationships that I'm talking about when I went to see her. But I knew. I mean, I knew, but I didn't know that I knew. So what I mean by that is that, you know, I was feeling anxious. They were making me feel a certain kind of way. My brain is transferring it to, wow, your heart, right? And yeah. I like you. Yes, let's be together. And then things don't turn out. The same scenario happens over and over again. And I can't, because my body knew, I can't now, this is why I say it's not just, it takes two to tango. It's because effectively, now I know all the signs were there. All this, I could have known this, but I did not know how to read my own gut instinct. I was bypassing it. And I think that's the bit, that's why I'm saying like it takes two to tango, because effectively none of those people that I had been with before, none of them really did anything wrong. To be perfectly honest, I was just not taking responsibility because I didn't know what I was accountable for. And this is why it's so important to do the inner work, because I think sometimes we hear a lot of people saying, oh, he's a cheater, oh, he's doing this, or, you know, they're the bad guy. I'm not talking about the abuser, right? And I know this is a slightly different topic, but a lot of times I'm like, yeah, but what did he do to earn your affection? Mm-hmm. And not saying that we are entitled as women, but I'm just saying sometimes, or either way, it could be man or woman, but it's like, what has that other person done to grant all your affection? Because I see this over and over again where people are giving their love and then complaining it's not being returned, and they call that person all kinds of name, including narcissist and stuff. And it's like, that person, you were acting, not you personally, Charlotte, but like, we are out there acting all like we are in a relationship and it's in your mind.
Yeah.
And the extreme is like the catfish, you know, the episode, the catfish, the series.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That's the more extreme. People think they are necessary. I'm like, this is insane. Some of it, is a bit less insane, but some of it is like, wait, you have never spoken on the phone. You have never met and you are in a relationship for how long? 5 years. Are you kidding me?
Right.
That is not the catfish's problem. Like that. Not saying sorry. Sometimes the other person wasn't even catfishing, by the way. They were actually being themselves, but they were not into the other person. So sometimes we transfer feelings to someone else and they've done nothing wrong. They haven't given you promises. You're the one always reaching out. Do you know what I mean? That's when it's extreme.
Yes. And that's like dependency.
That was not my scenario, but I mean, that's what I mean. It takes two to tango. There's a difference between real abuse and then people abusing themselves, because that's what it is a lot of the time with those catfish. It's like, no, you did not have to go through that for 5 years. That person barely got in touch with you.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's when someone confuses dependency with love.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that insight that you had of what you were confusing with love.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, we do that. Some people, you know, confuse rescuing for intimacy.
Right.
And, you know, so, but you might not have put that together if you didn't pause and then do that analysis, that assessment by writing it down. And so, I mean, that is amazing. And you came up with that even outside of therapy. And so that's even better. You know, that's why even the time between sessions is sometimes more valuable than in session, because you have all that time to, you know, put things together.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just, that's really amazing.
Yeah. Well, I'm not there yet, but yeah, no, I definitely don't pick men that make me anxious. That's for sure. That's for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, touch wood. I don't want to be jinxing it. I don't want to jinx it.
And I don't know if we, you know, again, this whole process is about just acceptance that we're perfectly imperfect. And we want to find that partner that's the same, perfectly imperfect, that we accept one another for who we are exactly at that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's life is too short to learn all this. I don't have time. It's too short. If you tell me I'll be 200, I'll be like, okay, fine. I'll take a 50-year break from men.
yeah, right.
That's how I feel like I'm going to do. But can I ask you, Shannon, the finishing thoughts? Because this has been, it's always an honor and a pleasure to have you on. And thank you so much for, you know, being willing to come and play with me on the podcast, you know. So
I feel like we play.
We do play. So I do want to ask, you know, I feel like I should almost like ask a different question to the regular finishing thoughts, because normally I always ask, you know, what do you wish you'd realized or understood at 18? But I think, I want to ask you something different. And I want to ask you, you know, is there anything that you wish that you'd recognize in how to choose a mate, you know, a partner, romantic partner, that you'd wish you knew how to recognize it, so you didn't have to go through all of this? Like, is there, what do you wish you sort of really realized that, oh, that's what feels right, that's what's right, or, you know?
So for my, yes, I do. And for myself, because I am a Christian and I did experience spiritual abuse, however, what has always maintained with me is that when I finally opened up my heart to spirituality and experienced unconditional love for myself through all this recovery process, that I wish I had been given that early on, because I do believe that's what opened me up to trust and have the love that I have. And I was able to trust John. I was able to feel grounded in myself to handle, you know, adversity, to be able to check, you know, who's safe, who's not safe. And so it just opened me up for really being able to not just give love, because I was good at giving love, but not 100%. And I was horrible at receiving love. And so when my spirituality, you know, grew on its own, because I had to foster that on my own because of the spiritual abuse. When I got that on my own, that's what happened.
Yeah. And then the last question, because, you know, because you've been on a few times, so I wanted to ask a different finishing thoughts. Because, you know, I know now you're married and, you know, we cannot, you know, I would not assume that everything's going to be plain sailing for the next 60 years or 50 years or however long we are granted on this planet. It's just like, what, you know, let's say if something happens, you get triggered, you know, there's a past demon or something. What would you advise, like, someone, let's say someone now, they've met someone and they're happy and they're in a good place and they got a good person. What is your advice? Like, you know, if something like we get triggered or there's a fear that comes up or all of a sudden the past demon comes up and we don't know how to trust or we feel something, you know, it gets a bit dark. What do you advise for people to do? Like, you know, if they don't have access to therapy or a coach?
I actually have been triggered a couple times, mm-hmm. and I've had, you know, open and honest communication with John. He, if you remember, we didn't know what was going on. I didn't have words for what I went through. Mm-hmm. So all of this has been new for him in understanding me. So I know you're saying without having the therapy. So I did have him in a couple sessions with me, with my therapist, mm-hmm. without therapy. Nowadays, there are amazing videos on YouTube. Now, you have to be careful, but there are people who like give very good therapeutic advice for trauma. And the ones that I trust are people who do talk about like the polyvagal theory. And I think, Angie, you can post this on your mm-hmm. story, but there are videos about like meditative, you know, ways to calm down and reset your nervous system. There are books about complex PTSD. There's also books that are about healing from abuse, and they really are very, very helpful. The reason why I like some of these YouTubes is because they're shorter. And when people are triggered, they're not necessarily going to sit down and read a book.
You can't. It's too, much anxiety going around.
So guided meditations specifically for like trauma are the best to go to so that you can get your nervous system regulated first is the very best line of action to do because you want to stabilize your nervous system first.
And are these, you just go on YouTube and go guided meditation for
trauma.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And then I know you mentioned there was like, I think there was like 50 flags, red flags, that there was a list of something. Is that a list that people can access? So how does that work?
There are a ton of red flags. And so,
but is there like a list that people can go on or is that?
I put together a bunch several resources, but I'll tell you, I love Sandra Brown mm-hmm. and she wrote a book, How to Spot a Dangerous Man Before You Get Involved. And she also has a workbook that goes with this. So just like you and I were talking about the value of writing things down. Mm-hmm. And so her book, she has 8 different types of dangerous men. This is why I really like it. And then at the end of each section of the 8 types of men, she has the flags to watch for with these particular men.
Okay.
And it is really good because there are so many men that are covert and overt that they are hard to recognize. And she's got them in her book.
Yeah, maybe you could write a book on how to recognize a good man this way, like just to simplify it, you know?
I know,
to be
right?
Inundated with all the fears of what all the bad stuff that could happen, you know, because, you know, you just have to turn on the news and we're good.
I know. We need to have one of those good guys. Like, he needs to write a book. Good guys finish last.
Yeah.
You make it first.
Yeah. Get him first. Yeah. Snatch that good guy up. Like, I'm going to snatch him up. Yeah. So, Shannon, can you please tell us, like, where can we find you? How can people work with you? Give us all the good stuff.
Okay. My website is the www. And it's unlocking fortitude.com. And my Instagram is Shannon Higgins LPC.
Perfect. Thank you so much for today, Shannon. Thank you for coming back. This has been, again, another wonderful episode to do with you. And yeah, have a lovely weekend. This is a Saturday.
Thank you. And I just love being on your podcast. And I hope everyone really, you know, soaks this in.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Shannon.
Thank you.
And now, John's wedding vows to Shannon.
Oh. It's all seriousness. I vow to be your partner in life, to always walk beside you, to encourage you, and to support you, to run with you through the adventures and carry you through troubles. I vow to honor and cherish you with all my thoughts and actions. I vow to listen to your words and to hear your heart. I vow to celebrate with you in the best of times and to lean into you in the hardest of times. I vow adventure with you as we walk this path together, to be your partner in crime, to always have your back, and to never rat you out.
I think he meant you, Declan.
I vow to never take you or us for granted, to always be available for you, and to never abandon you. I vow to always give you as much as I take, to remember that this isn't a contest, the score doesn't matter, and that loving you is winning.
We're real competitive.
And it is a contest. I vow to protect you and to care for you and to pour out my affections on you. Aiden and Declan, thank you for standing with me today. Thank you for sharing your mother, your family, your dogs, your lives with me. I vow always to love you, to try to set a good example for you, to support you in achieving your goals and dreams, to guide you through your journeys, and to always swing through Whataburger when you're hungry. Shannon, you are... It's only one more paragraph. I'll be done. Shannon, you are my unicorn. My beautiful, mythical, magical woman that is unique in this world. Every time I see you, I'm drawn to you. I am awed by you and filled with wonder and amazement. Being around you calms my soul. Thank you for choosing me. I love you.